And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week, two items, two big things. Everything else is covered by them. There's the war. It's a European-wide war, really, and the military aspect is centered in the Ukraine, but there's a worldwide economic aspect, which is centered in New York. We have to talk about that. But before that, we also had the hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to be a Supreme Court justice. And I think that we saw what the right wing of the Republican Party, which is the majority of the Republican Party, has in mind for the nation as a whole, has in mind for the agenda for the nation's politics for the next decade. That came through to me loud and clear in these hearings. So anyway, I want to talk about that first, assuming that we're not going to get involved in an atomic war. There'll be something actually to have politics about. What did you think about the hearings and what the Republican questions indicated?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things that we could think of. First of all, when you talk about the right wing of the Republican Party, I mean, this is the far, far right wing of the Republican Party. As I say, with an airplane, you can't fly with only the right wing, but that's what they're trying to do. And they're trying to fly this country into the ground, in essence. They're very much want to take this country back to at least the 1950s. And I think...
How about the 1890s?
Well, yeah, the 1890s with Plessy versus Ferguson, yeah. We got into the 50s when things started to break a little bit towards civil rights. You had the Brown versus Board of Education decision that started to animate that right wing that you talk about in the Republican Party, although back then it was the right wing of the Democratic Party that was being animated. In some ways, it's a refighting of the Civil War in terms of black versus white and rights and things like that. But in effect, this has just been an ongoing battle in which this certain element refuses to accept that they lost and move on. And what they want to do and what they think they now have the power to do, and certainly in the Supreme Court they seem to be having that, is, as I said, take us back and set the country back for decades and decades and decades. I've always said that there's two or three things that the Republican Party has objected to that the Supreme Court has allowed. One is on race, and the other is on government, on the business side, government rules and regulations, restraints on the predatory practices of the far wing of capitalism. And these are just repeat battles that keep going on and on and on. What we heard, let me bring it up a little bit more modern, from to the 80s, when Ronald Reagan attempted to put a guy named Robert Bork on the Supreme Court. Bork had been a judge, a circuit court judge. He'd been a professor, what they call an intellectual, but he was an ideological intellectual. And in essence, he said that there is no right to privacy. that the Supreme Court had recognized on a whole number of things. And technically, he's correct. When you look at the Constitution, it doesn't say you have a right to privacy.
That doesn't make him technically correct. That just means the word doesn't appear in the Constitution.
Right.
There is a school of constitutional interpretation, and it has dominated, which is called substantive due process, which deals with rights that the Supreme Court says really do exist, even though they're not enumerated, they're not mentioned, they're not spelled out in the Constitution, but they exist, right?
Well, that's where I was going. Although they technically don't appear there, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights said there are rights that people have that are not, as you said, enumerated, and it's just a question of whatever they are, when they start coming out. And what we had in the early 1960s and mid-1960s was this kind of enumeration. There was the case of Griswold versus Connecticut, in which the Supreme Court said married couples have a right to have intimate relations with contraception. They have a right to get contraceptives. That's not in the Bill of Rights, but it's part of the privacy. Then we had the case of Loving versus Virginia, in which the Supreme Court said people have a right to marry the person that they want to marry, regardless of the racial makeup of the couple.
And that was in the 1960s, right?
Right. Yeah, those were in the 1960s, and the world didn't end after those things. But Bork said that you don't have these rights, and he also, and they get into these things they call property rights, where they say if you own a business, you have a right to discriminate against people, and that those things were pretty well done away with by the Civil Rights Act, the Public Accommodations type of act, and the court's interpretation of that. And this week, what we saw in the questioning of Ketanji Brown Jackson was Republican senators openly stating and questioning these decisions. Why should people have a right to marry someone of a different race? Why should couples have the right to contraception? Why shouldn't businesses be able to discriminate on the basis of race or religion or gender or these things that the law has called protected classes of people? And when you think of the America that they really want to have, it's essentially white people of a certain type of Christian faith.
White males.
Yeah, males in particular. I mean, what we see is being done across the country in terms of the abortion cases by state legislators. It's amazing. Someone once said, if men could have babies, the right to abortion or contraception would be sacraments, but these legislators, the restrictions that they're putting on abortion or the ability of women or the way that they've worded things to allow lawsuits that would punish people for actually exhibiting these rights. And let me just say something very basic, and that is, if you have a basic right, why should it only apply in certain states? Why isn't it a national right?
Aren't you asking the question backwards?
We want the right to hold people as slaves.
Yeah.
I used to ask the question, people would say, well, it wasn't about slavery, it was about states' rights. And my question was very simple. Okay, name me three things that the state of South Carolina wanted to do that that Massachusetts didn't, that didn't involve slavery. Okay?
Yeah.
You can't come up with three.
No, because it's nonsense. It's nonsense. It was, at the time, everybody knew it was a war to defend, protect slavery. That was the whole point of it. It was to protect the social status, the wealth, the privileges, and the power of the slave-owning class. That's what war was about. There's no question about that. They may have, in the beginning, been on the northern side. They may have disguised it. They may have said, well, to preserve the Union. But the 30 years of struggle before that to preserve the Union all was about should or could there be slavery or did there have to be no slavery. So that's not that was never even a historical debate of substance. And the point is that when in answer to your question, if you have a substantive right, how can you not have it nationally? What they're really saying is you shouldn't have it.
Yeah. Right?
You shouldn't have it in South Carolina. You shouldn't have it in New York. You shouldn't have it in Alaska. You shouldn't have it anywhere. And as soon as they get strong enough, that's exactly what they will say.
Well, they may be strong enough on the court right now. You've got the Federalist Society people that are on the court think along those lines.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some way, there were some pundits that said, well, when Ketanji Brown Jackson is nominated, when a black woman is nominated, it's not going to matter so much because she's only going to replace another one of the more liberal judges. So it's still going to be 6-3. But the fact of the matter is, this woman has two strikes against her from the beginning. One, she's a woman, and two, she's black.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to empower anybody of either of those two basic traits in any manner, shape, or form.
Well, unless you're Coney, what's her name?
Barrett. Yeah.
That if you feel like that, you can have power.
Yeah, I mean, if you're willing to be a woman who doesn't empower women.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Precisely, of which there are plenty. There are legions of them. There are organizations of them. In every era, there have been people who demanded to be enslaved, were willing to be enslaved.
Willing to be enslaved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of this has a religious aspect to it, a radical religious aspect to it. One of the first questions asked of her was about her faith. And as you know, the Constitution states that there shall be no religious test for any public office.
Right.
But still they asked the question.
Right.
And it, you know, it wasn't asked of most people that come before the court, before the Senate for hearings, and it's just, it's just the arrogance of the display of contempt for what was settled law or the settled parts of the Constitution is enormous here.
But there's nothing settled. That's the point. Politics is never settled. It always continues. Struggle over freedom and the rights of people never ends. You can't say, all right, I've established this principle. It's strong. It'll live forever. No. There's no society that you can point to. There's no era that you can point to in which the struggle hasn't got to be fought over and over again, no matter what the victory is. A year goes by, 20 years go by. And the struggle comes up again. And you say, "What? I thought we did this. How come we have to do this all over again?" Because there are reactionary forces. That's why. And there's no example of an issue that's finally been laid to rest. None.
Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, there was a parallel event this week that came out that involves the court. And that was the revelation of the text between the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, Ginny Thomas, and the chief of staff of Donald Trump, Mark Meadows. Now, of course, you know, the interesting part of this, the overlapping part, is that Jenny Thomas and Clarence Thomas are an interracial couple. And the question in the Senate would have prevented them from getting married in a lot of places. But that doesn't seem to faze Jenny Thomas in the least. And her
hypocrisy is not an embarrassment for this group.
No.
It's kind of a strength.
Yeah. The text, I'm kind of surprised that he didn't try to delete them, given what they said. But the texts showed that this extremism, and it also displayed some of the religious aspects of it, because she's using the terms good and evil, or evil, on this, as if it's a religious crusade that had to be used to stop Joe Biden from becoming president.
I think for her, it is a religious crusade.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And the nuttiness of it, how far out she went on this, talking about that, first of all, QAnon conspiracy stuff, that she said at this moment, the Biden crime family is being investigated for fraud. And she was talking about voter fraud because she believed that there was this QAnon messaging that Donald Trump had set up trap by having watermarked ballots in 12 key states that would prove that there was fraud going on when the proper watermark ballots weren't returned and were counted. And this is what she said was going to be the crime of the heist of the century. And the remedy was going to be a military tribunal held off of Guantanamo. I mean, the things that she strung together there.
But she also used the phrase, the word Kraken, right?
Yes.
And that was a word that that crackpot lawyer used, and people laughed Sidney at her Powell. For using it.
Sidney Powell.
It turns out that she wanted Sidney Powell to be in charge of Trump's legal team.
Right.
I wouldn't doubt that she came up with the word Kraken, and Sidney Powell took it from her.
Well, we don't know who took it from.
But what? One of them took it from the other.
Yeah, and I mean, Sidney Powell has been shown time and time again to just be a fraud herself. She has made wild accusations that she's never been able to back in court. She lost every case that she had. She's been admonished by certain courts. She's being investigated as to have discipline against her in a number of courts. And she's been sued by Dominion trying to, you know, ruin their business for untold amounts of money. I think Smartmatic also may have sued her. Now, there was a dismissal in one case, but it wasn't on because there was no merit. It was just that there was no jurisdiction in that state, so that she can be sued somewhere else for that. But, I mean, the cast of characters that's involved, one on top, you know,
but in the meanwhile, Clarence Thomas sits on the Supreme Court. Nobody's demanding that he be impeached. He's above all the rules. He can do whatever he feels like doing. There are no ethical laws or rules that bind every other lawyer and every other judge in the country, but they don't bind these nine judges at the Supreme Court. So Jenny Thomas can whip up all this stuff, can be involved in all of these cases, can bring cases to the Supreme Court. He can rule on those cases and does rule on those cases.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when the general rule is that you, one, can't sit on a case or render a judgment on a case once you have a conflict of interest. But the rule was really expanded to say it's not only if you technically have a conflict of interest, but even if you have the appearance of a conflict of interest, you should remove yourself, recuse yourself. And Clarence Thomas has chosen not to obey any of these guidelines that every other federal judge and every other lawyer has to do.
But there is a federal law that says that if you're related to somebody who will benefit from a ruling that you are in a position to make, you must recuse yourself. And that, I think, is binding on every judge, even Supreme Court justices. There's nothing that carves them out from that particular federal law.
We may find out if anybody tries to enforce that.
Yeah, that's the question. Who would be the enforcer?
Yeah, the Supreme Court. But, you know, and I'm sure Clarence Thomas would sit on that case.
Right.
Don't forget, the sole dissenting vote in the Supreme Court about the release of documents to the January 6th commission committee. And, of course, now we know why he was opposed to that. And meanwhile, he and Justice Alito and I think Gorsuch or Amy Coney Barrett have been going around the country saying, why do people think we're political? We're not a political court. All you folks are wrong. There's nothing political about what we do. You know,
that's the way that they be political, by claiming not to be political. That's the form. That's the formula. That's the methodology. We don't do this while they do it.
While they do it. You know, and it's the same thing, you know, where they project when they say someone else is doing something that they in fact, are doing themselves. And
so let me ask you this. In what way are they different than Putin's courts?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a good the difference is shrinking very rapidly.
Yeah.
The only thing is that, you know, you have to say after the 2020 election, in general, the American judicial system held. Court after court refused to overturn statewide elections. But again, the Republicans continue to pursue this in state after state, and where they can't win, they're going after the offices that are going to determine this the next time.
Or they come up with that independent legislature doctrine, which says the courts don't have the right to intervene in whatever it is they don't want them to intervene. In the cases now, they're talking about election law. I'll bet you dollars to donuts that if they win that one, they'll discover that it is an implied right of the state legislatures to be independent across the board, and the courts can't intervene anywhere.
Yeah, pretty soon they're gonna say that the states are independent of the national government.
That's right. That's what you can see it coming.
Yeah, the nullification, which was proposed by John C. Calhoun in order to stop federal laws with regard to slavery, they're going to make that the law of the land again, and then now you're back to the pre-Constitution days.
That's exactly right. You'll be back at the Articles of Confederation, which the Constitution was written to get rid of. So these are people who will swear allegiance to the Constitution for the purpose of making sure it gets scuttled.
Right. But, you know, then they go through this originalism and they'll say, well, the Articles of Confederation preceded the Constitution, therefore they're superior.
They're superior, exactly, right. And it'll turn out that Washington and Hamilton were traitors.
Pretty soon, or Madison, in that category. I mean, there, in effect, we used to have a term, the rule of law, and they're really getting to the point where there are no rules for these folks. And that's Trumpism, you know.
Well, but there is a rule. We win. That's the rule. We win. We win.
Yeah. We win, you lose.
Yeah.
And it gets back to what I've said about the Republicans now, you know, that since over the last 30 years, they believe that they alone have the right to run the government, to run the country.
Gets back to the Koch brothers' founding theory that the people of the country are too stupid or maybe too smart to know what's good for the country. They only know what's good for themselves, as if the majority of the country isn't the country. So therefore, since they're too stupid to know what to do, they shouldn't be allowed to decide what to do, and only the upper crust should be allowed. The corporate leadership should be allowed to make the decisions. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's the wealthy, because they have the power and the property.
Exactly. They have the property. Then they'll defend their property, which is good for everybody.
And the property rights exceed the rights of persons.
That's right. That's what they're after. That's what this is all about. after all is said and done, after all the yelling is over, after all of the hypocrisy is settled, it's just about keeping your wealth, keeping your privilege, keeping your power. That's what it is, right? And Nancy McLean did us a great favor by excavating the original documents from these right-wingers to show this is what they're about. This is what they really believe. They're unashamed. They say it.
Well, I might be doing some deep research this weekend because I'm going to be going over to George Mason University, which is the hub of the.
Maybe they won't let you in. Maybe there's a test, and you'll prove to be radioactive, and you won't be able to come in.
Well, we'll see. I'll go disguised or something. I'll pretend I'm wealthy.
You're wealthy. That's good. That's good. Right. Well, you know, it's all of this that comes back in politics to the question, was Biden kidding himself when he said he can work with Republicans? Because he sure hasn't been able to.
That's the other thing, is that the Republicans have chosen, by and large, in almost 100% of the cases, to say we will not work with any Democrat. And Biden had hoped to. There's a couple things that have gone through, but not an awful lot.
These Republicans say about Ketanji Brown Jackson that we oppose her because we don't like her judicial philosophy. Who asks you to decide about her judicial philosophy? You say, your people say, your judges say, we're umpires. We don't set the law. We just want to, the law's there. We're umpires. So judicial philosophy doesn't enter into the picture, right? That's what they allegedly believe. But when it comes to, but of course it's nonsense, it can't happen, it doesn't happen. But that's what the case is that they make. But when it suits their purposes, they abandon that case. And they say, oh no, judicial philosophy is key. There is no such thing as an impartial judge. She says, I judge the facts of the case. They say, impossible. You have a judicial philosophy. Well, if she has a judicial philosophy, does Alito? Does Gorsuch? Does Kavanaugh? Does Coney Barrett?
Yeah, none of that judicial philosophy stuff mattered when the Federalist Society, which has a judicial philosophy, was running the running interference for them and running the list of judges.
It's a lot better to say, of course, everybody has a judicial philosophy. Of course, we have an ideology, and of course, that should play a role, because that way, the Constitution, if we're dealing with the Supreme Court, begins to reflect the developing moods of the people of the country. Other than that, people are born for the Constitution. The Constitution wasn't born for the people.
Right. But they refuse to believe that the Constitution should reflect that. They believe that it was set in stone in 1787 and 1789, and that it doesn't evolve, that it's a dead document. I used to call these folks the Dead Constitution Society.
Well, that's what they are, and they glory in that. You're not even insulting them. They agree with you. They glory in it because that protects their privilege. It means nothing can change that will upset their status in society. And in the end, their great ally is Putin. He believes the same thing.
Yeah. We'll see how long he... He's able to last. He overreached.
Yeah, maybe.
But the cost of it is enormous.
The cost is enormous, of course, to all the people of Ukraine, no less the people of America, no less the people of Russia. That's who takes it on the chin for these bastards. Well, that's it for the night, for this week.
Yeah. And
let's hope that you emerge unscathed from visiting George Mason, and I'll be glad to hear what you uncovered when you tell us about it next week.
Okay. We've got April Fool's Day coming up. We'll see who the biggest fool is this coming week.
Let's hope it's not the people.
That's for sure.
Yeah. All right. See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk.